Welcome to the Side Hustle Project, a podcast where we explore the nitty-gritty details behind what it takes to start and grow a profitable side hustle. I'm your host, Ryan Robinson. In this podcast, I'm bringing you interviews with entrepreneurs, best-selling authors, CEOs, investors, and people just like you who are building and profiting from interesting side hustles. In today's episode, we're talking to Josh Hanum, the founder and CEO of Interact, a quiz-making tool for bloggers, marketers, and small business owners. Originally from a small rural town in Central California, not too far from where I actually grew up, Josh started his very first business installing lawns on people's yards at the age of 16. He eventually started tinkering with and selling computers and made his way down to Los Angeles to attend college at UCLA. And it was then that Josh began taking on consulting gigs, building websites for small local businesses with a few of his friends. And after getting a request from one of these consulting clients to have a quiz built for his website, Josh had a bit of a light bulb moment. He and his friends spent a few weeks building this first quiz, and after that started to talk to other business owners about whether or not they'd use quizzes in their marketing efforts. After getting some positive feedback for the idea, Josh and his friends hired a developer and built a minimum viable product of their first quiz-making tool. And over the course of the next few years, Josh went through a hell of a roller coaster ride of ups and downs trying to grow Interact before finally finding the right growth lever that's now brought them up to 1,000 paying customers. In this episode, Josh and I talk about going from blowing $300,000 on sales reps and tools trying to grow his startup to eventually letting all those reps go and deciding to double down on content marketing as the company's biggest growth channel. We cover how Josh built a partner program of over 1,300 bloggers writing about and promoting Interact and how that grew the business from 200 customers all the way up to 1,000 customers today. We dive into his most painful failures with the company, why he decided to take a brief hiatus from working on the business, and how doing so allowed him to step back in with a refreshed sense of motivation to grow the business. All of this and so much more in this super tactical episode today. As always, you can find everything we mention in the show notes at ryrob.com/podcast. That's spelled ryrob.com/podcast. Let's get into today's interview with Josh Hanum. Josh, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
I'm pumped for you to be here, man. And I want to start this off the same way that I start off almost every episode of this show by asking, what book are you reading right now? Or what's been your favorite recently?
Ah, yes. I have a very interesting answer to this. I'm reading this book called Into the Silent Land, which is written by monks from a really long time ago. And it's basically about meditation. And specifically, I'm a Christian guy, so it's about prayer. But it's really about recentering yourself. And it's been absolutely life-changing in terms of how I think about creating content and my business and all these types of things. Just the concept of truly being silent and even avoiding like the thoughts that are going on in your head is what it's about. So very, very good read. It's not light reading, but it's amazing.
It sounds like it's difficult to implement what you're learning.
it takes a lot of practice, a lot of practice. It's not some easy stuff, but I think it's heavy, but it's really, really helpful.
I like that. And it's coming from a cool place too.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it really helps you. I mean, recentering, especially in business where everything's just flying around all the time, is an amazing thing to be able to do. So that's why I really like it.
All right. So Josh, let's go back to the beginning. Where are you originally from?
I am from the Central Valley of California, which I say California and people are like, oh, beaches and surfing. But I basically grew up on a farm. Where I grew up used to be an almond orchard. There's still almond trees in the backyard of the house that I grew up in. So it's not California the way you think of it. It's more like the Midwest. And when I talk to friends from the Midwest, we have very similar childhoods. So grew up essentially on a farm. My friends had farms. One of them owned a chicken ranch and I used to go hang out there all the time. So that's where I grew up. That's my background. And now I run a software company. So that works.
No, I love this. And I think it is one of those things where when you and I first met, I was like, oh my God, we're kindred spirits here because I am also from rural Central California, you know, town where there's more cows than people.
Mm-hmm.
Literally. So it's awesome, man. You've had a cool journey. And where'd you go to school? So where'd you grew up in this small town? What came next?
Yes, I grew up in a small town, never left a whole lot. I actually never even was on an airplane until I left my hometown. And then I went to UCLA, so slightly different environment than growing up in a place that's full of cows and farms.
I love that. And so you're down in LA for college. You know, I want to dive straight into this because I know you did some side projects, some businesses while you were still in school. What would you say at least is the first business that you started?
Yeah, so the first business that I started was actually when I was still in that hometown, and it was installing lawns, which is not a glamorous life. Basically, you haul these pieces of grass that are cut out of the ground, and then you put them into other people's yards, and these pieces of grass, it's called sod, it's like 50 pounds each, and it's also incredibly sticky, and it's really hot in the Central Valley. So I started this business because I couldn't get a regular job. I was working age when it was 2007, and that was right in that financial crisis. So nobody would hire me. So I started my own job, created my own job rather, made a bunch of flyers, went around, said, I know how to install grass. And we got some jobs doing that. We would spend full days in 100 degree weather hauling these pieces of grass, laying them in the ground, and then like cutting the shapes to make sure it all fit. So it was pretty terrible, but at the same time, I was doing my own thing and I loved it. I loved the feeling of finishing a job, being at the end of the day, and just like that sense of accomplishment where you look back and you put in somebody's lawn or you put in their sprinklers. And that's an actual thing that you did and you took it from start to finish. And I just felt so amazing when I was doing that. So that was the first real company that I ran. But I didn't run it for very long because I threw out my back when I was like 16 years old from doing that. And that was a terrible, terrible thing. So I switched over to buying and selling computers, which was my second company that I ran the end of high school and then through the beginning of college, but had to shut it down in college because I was failing out after my first quarter. I failed all of my classes my first quarter, which was awesome. And so those were my first two experiences in business.
Parents love that, don't they?
Oh yeah, it was awesome. I had an internship even though I was running my own thing. And since I was on academic probation from failing all my classes, I almost lost that internship, which was pretty traumatizing. And I was always a good student. I graduated second in my graduating class from high school. And then I go to college and I'm just like totally losing it. It was not great. So that was the first time I actually kind of took a step back and took a break before jumping back into things.
So you get to college and by this point in time, you've already had two businesses. What did your parents do work-wise? And, you know, were they sort of like an influence in fostering you to go out and do things on your own? Or was this sort of like a innate drive that you've always felt yourself?
Yeah, so my mom's a teacher and my dad wasn't in the picture for most of growing up. But what I did have was the ability to go out and build stuff on my own. So my mom was like very anti-technology when I was growing up. So I didn't have a TV, didn't have a computer until I was like 11 or 12 years old. And even when we did get one, there was nothing on it to actually do. And so I was left to create my own fun. And I did. I would build a bunch of stuff. I built a treehouse in my backyard, a teeter-totter system, a network of tunnels, like all this crazy stuff. And what it taught me was how to build stuff. And that's really the same exact concept as when you're building a business. You have to figure out how to put the pieces together. You have to figure out how to source the right things. If you personally can't do something, you have to find somebody else who can, that can come help you. You pull that all together, and then you create something. And so I think even more than, you know, the influence of what they did or anything like that was just the ability to foster that creativity from a super young age and then carry that all the way through. And now even, you know, in the business I run now, a lot of it's just about creating. It's a lot about what can you do? How do you solve problems when you don't really know the answers? And that's, I think that's what I pull from childhood a lot.
Yeah, no, that's a great takeaway. And you know, let's dig into that business that you are running now, because that's really the reason why we originally connected, because I love your product. And the business, for everyone listening, is called Interact, and it's a quiz making software. So can you tell us about what originally led you to want to build this product in the first place?
Yeah, so it's a tool for making quizzes, like you said. And the reason that we started building this product was because right after that break that I took in college, I couldn't stay away for long. And so I met up with a couple of friends who were actually in my Bible study in college. All of us were kind of creators. We liked building things, but none of us were actually doing anything at the time. I was taking that break because of, you know, failing classes, and they were just kind of in between different projects themselves. So I met up with two friends and we started a small web consultancy. So we'd build websites for small business owners. We had a doctor, we had a lawyer, we had somebody who was selling supplements, we had just a variety of things. But one of our clients was a sales consultant. So he would sell consulting packages to big companies and then go train their sales teams. And on his website, he asked us to build him a quiz. And we didn't think much of it at first, but when we built it, it worked so much better than any of the other things we had ever tried, because we built websites for lots of people. And one of the biggest goals when we built websites was building up an email list. Everybody wanted new contacts. It was the equivalent of a Rolodex for them. And most of our clients were older, so their whole thing was how many contacts can I get? And this quiz worked so well for bringing in leads, bringing in new contacts for him, that we decided to slowly over time with much painfulness build that into a platform that anybody can use to build a quiz. And now you can make the same quiz that we built for him that took us several weeks that first time. You can do it in 15, 20 minutes with our platform.
I love that this was born out of, you know, a very manual process that you were essentially paid kind of hourly or, you know, as a consultant to create first.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think when people ask me now about how you come up with ideas, or they come to me and they're like, hey, I have this amazing idea for a business. And, you know, everybody focuses on what the idea is or how they're going to solve something that they think is a problem. But in reality, I think a lot of it just comes from manual effort. And you are in an industry, like we were in the web design industry working with small businesses. We saw what the problems were. And then all of a sudden, there was this solution. And even though the solution was arduous, it was not clean when we built that first one, it worked. And so we knew we had that one data point, and it was enough to go off of to then say, let's give this a shot.
So I'm going to dig now into this long, arduous process a little bit. So you've got this one quiz up on this client's website that, you know, he paid you to create. What came next? Did you guys immediately think like, okay, let's start productizing this. Let's, you know, begin pitching it out to people who need quizzes, or was it sort of a more organic process?
Yeah. So at that point, I had no idea what I was doing with marketing. The only previous experience I had was I used to run this website where I'd interview founders, and it was all by email. So I would email a founder, ask them questions, they'd send them back, I'd turn it into a blog post, and I ran this blog. So I knew how to email people. That was the only thing that I knew. That was the entirety of my internet marketing experience, because my previous two businesses were installing lawns and selling computers, neither of which have anything to do with internet marketing. So the first thing that we tried was using Upwork, which, you know, you can post jobs on there, you can post things that you need to be built. And we would go through and look for anybody that wanted a quiz to be built and say, hey, we can do that. And then we would try to build it using this rudimentary platform we had started to create. And it sort of worked. We got a couple of people to pay us like $200 to build them a quiz and then connect it up to their AWeber list or MailChimp list or whatever they were using. And they paid us, but it ended up taking like 20 hours to build those quizzes that we got paid $200 for. So $10 an hour divided by three is $3.33 an hour, which is not that great in terms of making a living. So that was the first thing we tried. Quickly realized that was not going to work. Then I switched to sending emails because I figured, all right, if I can reach out to founders and they get back to me, maybe I can reach out to blogs and companies. They'll get back to me and then we can, you know, sell the product that way. But that was not at all effective. I would reach out to people. Most of them had no idea what I was talking about because this was before BuzzFeed. This was before anybody took internet quizzes. Everybody thought they were academic. They were like, oh, are you going to sell us some training platform? And I was like, no, it's like a quiz for marketing. And we get into these back and forth. I have these email chains that are crazy long, 75, 100 emails, just to figure out what the heck I was talking about. So that was frustrating. And then the ones that did get it, and they understood the concept, would ask me for the most absurd amount of customizations you can ever imagine. I have this screenshotted email from Priceline as I had emailed them about doing a quiz. They sent me an email back with, not even joking, like 15 bullet points. Each bullet point had several paragraphs, all of requests of things they wanted us to do for them. They wanted the quiz hooked into all of their internal systems, not even like an actual marketing system, stuff they had built themselves. They wanted it hooked up to every single social network. They wanted people to also be able to enter a giveaway when they took a quiz. It was the craziest thing I've ever seen. Oh, and by the way, when I was sending these emails, I was offering to do stuff for free because we just wanted to get customers. So not only was it free, but they wanted all of that stuff. So that was the second attempt. It did not work. We sent thousands of those emails, spent probably 8 months doing that, and got no one to pay for the product, which was absurdly frustrating. And then the funniest story out of all that time was we were still at UCLA when we were starting this, and that's pretty close to Brentwood. And I knew that a lot of rich people lived in Brentwood. So one day I printed out a bunch of flyers about using quizzes for marketing, rode my longboard to Brentwood, and went door to door trying to sell quiz marketing products to people. Wow. Which you can imagine did not work. It was really frustrating and mostly just got chased away. So those were the first three attempts at selling Interact. That was a solid 8 or 9 months, and we were working hard on it and got nowhere. So that was the initial attempt. And then right after that, I discovered content marketing through some people like Rand Fishkin from Moz and Brian Dean from Backlinko, reading their stuff. And I thought, maybe that will work for us. Like, I'm down to try anything at this point. And so I got into it and started writing based on the best practices that I could find. So everybody was talking about writing long posts, writing list posts, that kind of stuff. So I did, and I got pretty good at it. I wrote a bunch of posts like how to make blog content, newsletter ideas that will spur your list on, you know, why Google search is important, all these types of things. And we got a bunch of traffic to those, like tens of thousands of hits. But those blog posts were so generic that nobody signed up for our product. So again, I was spending hundreds, thousands of hours working on stuff and made zero headway in terms of actually selling the product. So now, spent 3 or 4 months on that. We're almost 12 months into this thing. It's April of 2014. We're about to graduate from college and still had made $0 on this company. The previous consulting work we had done was fizzling out because we were focused on the new product. And we pretty much were at a standstill. I didn't know what else to do. So pretty much out of exasperation, one night, it was a Friday night, because we used to work on Friday nights because we were super cool in college. One Friday night, I wrote this blog post, How to Make a Personality Quiz. And I had never done this before because I was like, it's not that complicated. You just like do the questions and stuff and then you make the personality quizzes. It's not that hard. But I wrote that on a Friday, woke up on Monday with 3 paying customers, which was just the craziest thing. It was like...
That's also a very quick return for content marketing.
Yeah, like it ranked somewhere on the first page. I think when I looked at the stats, 10 people had seen it and then 3 had signed up. And I was like, what is this? This is so easy. Like, I needed one of those Staples that was easy buttons, because it felt so simple compared to, you know, all these other things I had done that were taking so long and just getting us nowhere. So that was the breakthrough moment. From that point, for the next 12 months or so, things went really, really smoothly. We did probably 100 posts that were along the same lines. So, you know, all sorts of how to make quizzes posts. We got up to about 200 paying customers, and we're just having some really, really nice success. But the problem that we encountered about a year in, so 2 years into the full business, was that there just wasn't a lot of people searching for these types of terms. You know, again, you know, the BuzzFeed craze had kind of come and passed by that point. People just weren't aware that you could even use quizzes as a marketing tool. And so I didn't know what else to do and went back to trying to do sales. So we started sending emails again, started doing cold calling this time, hired some people that had sales experience, and spent the next 2 years completely failing at selling the product. So from end of 2014 to the end of 2016, we sent a total of about 50,000 outreach emails, did 7,000 cold calls, spent $300,000 on tools and employees. And at the end of that time, we still had 200 customers, which was the most depressing 2 years I think I've ever had in business. It was really, really rough.
Okay. So we just covered a lot. It sounds like it's been an insane journey up to the end of 2016. So, you know, when you get to this point where you're sitting at around 200 customers, what made you decide to keep going with it? Because now we're in early 2018. It's been another year and a half almost since you had that sort of blunder with hiring salespeople. What made you guys continue with the business instead of sort of folding up shop, being 4 years in, 200 customers with the SaaS product?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing was it just went back to the creation. You know, during that time, at the end of 2016, we were back down to only having 3 employees. We had kind of fluctuated in the meantime there. So we were back down to 3 employees, but those 3 employees were myself and 2 engineers. And so the majority of our time, we were really focused on building stuff. And, you know, it kind of just got back to the basics. I like to build stuff. I like creating things. And that's what we tapped into during that time, was just the joy of creating, the joy of building. And I'm not gonna lie, it was really, really tough to, you know, be in that position, because I'm the type that believes if you're not moving forwards, you're moving backwards. And so since we weren't moving forwards, we were moving backwards. And it did get tough. I mean, there was a lot of sacrifices that had to be made during that time, you know, salary-wise and all sorts of other things. So it did get really tough, but I think it was just tapping into that joy of creation, and then also just the concept of not wanting to just give up. You know, there was something there, you know. And during that time, we had had an opportunity to work with a lot of really, really cool companies. It just was, something was off. And so that's where things were at towards the end of 2016.
Now, throughout this period of time, were you able to support yourself with the company, or were you having to take on like other little side projects or consulting gigs to support your lifestyle? Tell us about that.
Yeah, I mean, yes and no is the answer. So we were able to, you know, take salaries. Myself, as you know, the founder and the majority shareholder in the company, you know, kind of was more tied to the fluctuations of the company. So during a couple of those years, really didn't make a lot of money. I live in the Bay Area and was pulling in about $40,000 a year, which is barely surviving here. And it, you know, it takes you through, but it also takes a toll, because you're kind of not able to do a lot of the things you want to do. You are not able to have kind of the financial freedom to travel as much as you like and that kind of thing. So it does hold you back a decent amount. But we made it through, without completely failing. So I guess that's the silver lining to it.
So fast forwarding up to today, how many users are you guys at? What does your monthly revenue look like now?
Yeah, so it was 200 paying customers at the end of 2016, so a year and a couple months ago, and we just hit 1,000, so 5x in 13, 14 months. And then we are just at $1 million revenue mark now as well.
Okay, so that's a pretty big change. Tell us about what happened. What did you unlock?
Yeah, so first of all, there's a great turning moment story, like any story. At the end of 2016, I went on vacation, as you do when your company is failing. And I'm sitting at this waterfall in Morocco with my older brother, and it was just him and I. We were traveling with some other people, but we had kind of gotten separated from the group. So we were just like really chatting for quite a while. And we kept circling back around on how frustrating my life had been for the last 18, 24 months. And I just came to the realization, sitting there staring at this waterfall, that I just couldn't keep going the same way that I was going in terms of how the business was running. So I came back and I still didn't know what to do, but I let go the salesperson that we still had at that point and took kind of a hiatus, I guess, to just try to figure out what it is we should be doing. And when I came back, I think I realized we had to go back to what had worked in the past, which was the content. But the problem was not the topic of the content, it was the audience we were able to reach. And we only had one channel, and that channel was going through Google. And the only way we were going through Google was in a very direct manner, like exactly how to create particular types of quizzes. So what I came back and discovered was that there were other ways we could distribute that same type of content. And the one that we landed on was launching a partner program, which essentially means we're bartering our software in return for other people writing those same types of posts that had got us all our customers in the first place. So we work with a blogger, we barter, we say, hey, you can use our quiz software. In return, we would like you to write a blog post on how to use quizzes for marketing. Mm-hmm. And that was started in January of 2017. We now have 1,300 partners who have done hundreds, if not thousands, of posts. We also built up our own content marketing program, doubling down on the basic types of content and then introducing industry-specific content where we write tutorials for all sorts of industries. We started breaking down quizzes into the different elements. We started doing a lot of roundup posts, top types of quizzes, all that kind of stuff. So not only were we doubling down on our own stuff, but we were also adding these other elements to the content marketing mix. And now content is all we do. Even from our own blog, from our partner blogs, all sorts of stuff that we do internally, all gets published. And in an average month, there's probably 40 to 60 pieces going out across our partner network, as well as our own site. And that has been the game changer.
Wow. This is genius, I gotta say. And for everyone listening, this is like content marketing 101. Not only are you getting partners who have established audiences to promote your product to their people, but you're also getting all the SEO benefits of the links back to your site when these people are writing about you guys, which, in turn makes your content rank higher in organic search rankings, bringing you more people. So it's this sort of virtuous cycle, positive cycle.
Yeah, and it works amazingly well because now not only do we have all those posts going out on our partner blogs, they're reaching their audiences, but we're able to create a lot more of our own content now. We can rank for terms that we never could in the past. You know, we can get really specific, you know, how to make food quizzes, how to make vegan quizzes, all this stuff. We can get really specific. And then we can dive into the content of the quiz, how to write questions, how to write quiz titles, how to write better in general. Then all of these things start to rank because we have this partner network that's pouring in, and then we have our own content that's going out. And so it just all works in a really nice cycle. I actually have this graphic built up where it's got, you know, kind of these circles on the outside that represent all the partner content and the tangential type of content we do, and everything points inwards towards the core content pieces we have, which are like the how to make a personality quiz and how to make a multiple choice quiz. It all points in there. And then from there, that actually points to the product. So it's this huge web that goes out all across the web that's all pointing inwards towards signing up for our core product.
I love that. And we'll include that graphic in the show notes because I think this is a tactic that a lot of people listening here today can really employ for getting this, you know, similar kinds of results. And when we're talking about this partnership program that you guys have, can we rewind and go back to, do you know, the first handful of partners you onboarded? And what did that look like? How did you sort of court them? Did they come to you? Did you do sort of cold email outreach? Tell us about that.
Yeah, so it was all cold email outreach. And interestingly, it's very similar to what I used to do when I'd reach out to founders to interview them, because it's the same types of people, you know, people that are running their own sites, they're small business owners, whatnot like that. And they actually responded this time. So the first few that I did, it was really just, does this even work? So I drafted up a really quick email. It was just called Quiz Partnership. And it essentially said, hey, would you be interested in using this quiz tool? And in response, we'd love to have you write a blog post about it. And I went pretty crazy with it because obviously there was a lot of pent up energy from not doing so well for a couple of years. So I was sending, you know, 100 to 150 of these outreaches per day. And in the first day, we heard back from 10. And I was like, oh my gosh, we sent 50,000 sales emails and maybe got like 100 replies out of all those. And now I just sent 150 and 10 people responded. It, like, within 24 hours. It was insane. And it's just, you know, it's such a different pitch, obviously. Like, you're not necessarily asking for anything other than a blog post. And that blog post is actually really interesting content anyways, because at this point, people are interested in how to do quizzes. So that is a good post to have. But yeah, that's how I did it. And it was super like clunky at first. It was like, hey, like, can we talk on the phone? And then, you know, this is how we want to run this. And we'll reconnect when you do the blog post. So it was very manual. And now we have two people that work on that program full time, and they run it in a very nice manner that's all clean and tidy. But at first it was really just, can we even get this thing to work and send a ton of emails?
So how long did it take from, you know, you said the first day, send 150-ish emails, get 10 replies back with people interested. How long did it take to see customer numbers start to go up? And did that really sort of accelerate at like a breakneck pace, or has it been slow and steady over the past year?
Yeah, it really took about 6 months. The first few months, there was a very slight uptick. And then by July was really the first month that things started to take off. And then August was also a huge month. So yeah, it took quite a while. And that was because, you know, you have the initial interaction, and then they have to have time to use the product, and then they've got to draft up that post, and then it finally goes out. And, you know, quizzes are still a very new concept. So, you know, people who are reading those posts probably aren't going to sign up after they read one. They're probably not going to sign up after they read two, you know, but they read six or seven of them from different bloggers they know. And then they're like, okay, this is something that I need to really check out. So it took quite a long time. And I think that's kind of an industry standard in any sort of content marketing, that you really have to wait about 6 months to see any sort of results. And you should be tracking along the way. We had a lot of positive indicators. You know, obviously people were interested and they were writing the posts and our traffic was starting to increase. But in terms of the actual growth of customers, yeah, it was about 6 months.
I love that. Well, Josh, I want to transition over to a few of my frequently asked questions now, which I designed to be intentionally short on my end. Your answers do not need to be equally so.
Sweet.
Do you have any particular strategies or pieces of advice aside from, say, content marketing for our listeners here today who want to get their first 100 customers?
Yes. So even within content marketing, the number one strategy is just talking to your customers. And if you don't have customers yet, talk to your potential customers and just listen to what they're saying. I think that was the biggest thing I missed when I took, you know, so many avenues that weren't writing about how to make quizzes, because everybody I talked to would ask how it works. And I was like, oh, well, here's the explanation. It's really simple. And I never thought, oh, I should turn that into a blog post. And then when I did, obviously that's where things change. So talk to people that might use your product and listen to the questions they're asking. Those are the answers that will actually build your company.
I love that. All right, well, Josh, this is going to be my last question for you. What would you say has been the best investment you've ever made in the context of growing Interact? And this could be in the form of time, money, tools, products, services, or otherwise.
Yeah, I think the best investment has been hiring the right people. Hiring the right people and trusting them to do their job and then just kind of stepping back and then, you know, obviously being helpful where you can, but letting them run with things. That's been the biggest thing that's changed everything in my company, because it allows me to create, it allows them to have the freedom and autonomy to do their jobs well. So hiring the right folks and just fully trusting them to do what they're good at has been the biggest and best investment that we've made.
Beautiful. Well, all right. This has been a kick-ass conversation. Thank you so much for sharing all of your wisdom, your experiences, the ups and the downs. So can you tell everyone listening today where they can go to learn more about you, Interact, and everything you guys are up to?
Yeah. So for me, I'm usually on LinkedIn. You can search for Josh Hanum. I'm the only Josh Hanum in the world, so you'll find me. And then for us, you can check out tryinteract.com or go to tryinteract.com/blog to check out the content we've been talking about here.
All right. Awesome. Well, thank you again for joining us.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Side Hustle Project, I would love your support. Head on over to the Apple Podcasts app and give us a rating. And as always, you can catch every episode of the Side Hustle Project on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for tuning in.